I'm going to go ahead and call this meeting to order. Could we have a roll call, please?
Hartke?
Here.
Kibler? Maxwell? Rosales?
Here.
Schwartz?
Here.
Quisenberry? James?
Here. So we have a quorum. I just want to state that Gary Maxwell did send me an email stating he wouldn't be here tonight or his wife would leave him. So I don't know what that's about. I didn't ask. Next, we need approval of minutes.
So moved.
Second.
And that is the minutes that are at your desk, so everybody's clear because there was some changes. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Next, we need a motion for approval of agenda and addenda.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Next is public participation. I have one, and you know the rules. You're allowed 5 minutes. Mr. Kilgore, just go ahead and state your... We'll cut it to 3.5. You state your name and address, please.
James Kilgore, 602 East Harding, Urbana. I wanted to talk a little bit about the criminal justice system. Surprise. So obviously, I'm concerned that there seems to be a haste once again, as there was at the beginning of 2012, to build something, that somehow this is going to be the solution. And I wanted to look a little bit at kind of what's happening, you know, around the country, around particularly issues of mental health, that we're finding that we know that there's more people in jails and prisons with mental health issues than in mental health facilities. And one of the things that's happening, and it's also happening in this county, is that, I mean, sheriffs and law enforcement are motivating the building of new jails primarily as mental health facilities. We're seeing a complete change in the discourse in this county and across the country from a discourse that jails and prisons are about public safety and about crime prevention and about punishment, to jails as being the site of service delivery, of programs for people who traditionally would have been directed into social services, but now we're relocating the social services inside institutions of incarceration. And I think this is a serious concern. I've said on many occasions that I think the downtown jail is, to use the National Institute of Corrections term, deplorable. It's below a minimum level for what people for how people should be kept while they're incarcerated. And if I was a sheriff, which I doubt I ever will be, but should I be a sheriff, I would also motivate to improve the conditions of the people locked up inside the jail. So I would be motivating to find ways to improve the facilities. But I think, and the sheriff in each and every instance has to look out for the interests of law enforcement, corrections, et cetera. But the county board has a much bigger responsibility than that. The county board has to see the need for jail facilities in proportion to the need for other kinds of social services. And once again, we come back to the notion that we're on a path where we've allocated a few hundred thousand dollars to programs that we haven't given time to function, and now we're talking really about spending millions on facilities. So that is out of kilter in terms of the county weighing up how it's spending its resources and what kind of model of criminal justice it's moving towards. So I'm urging the county to make haste slowly on this, to look at alternatives, to look at temporary solutions, to look at the use of existing facilities, to look at the use of temporary minimum security dormitories, all of these low-cost options which leave the county with a flexibility that will not come from taking out a bonds for 5, 10, 15, and dare I say the horrible figure, $20 million. So I hope that this will be considered. And the last thing I want to just note is that this notion of no net new beds is a shell game. No net new beds means we can have no net new beds by rebuilding the downtown jail at the satellite. And we end up with 313 beds, which we definitely do not need. And that's going to just be a huge outlay. And I think what needs to be looked at is what are the needs, what are the alternatives, and what are the ways to save money rather than the ways to conform to this no net new beds notion. Thank you.
Next, we have communications. Does anybody have any communications? Hearing none, I'll move on. Next, we'll go to the Facilities Director report. I'll let Dana take it from here.
Thank you. Van handed out a sheet detailing our bid documentation for the installation of purchase of air-cooled chillers for the Brookings Administration Building. It details the process that was gone through. The four vendors that bid on our project, two bidders were rejected because they lacked the submittals that were requested within the bid. The successful bidder was A&R Mechanical. Their total price was $180,000. If you remember, the price estimate that the facility committee had heard before, submitted by the previous facilities director and discussed, I think, with the whole board, was estimated at $159,000 each for each chiller installed here at Brookings. So a price of $180,000 versus the $300,000 plus we thought was a terrific price, and plus the upgrade on electric and replacing the piping with new insulation is a win-win for us. So submit that for your approval.
And is that the $34,860 additional?
Josh.
Sorry.
Any questions, Josh?
On that, is that what you're talking about there? That second edition, okay.
Yeah,
because in my mind, we just will do it while we're in there.
We asked for clarification of their total proposal submittal early this morning, and to receive back communication that. That $180,000 was inclusive of doing the electric work, the piping work. Other people, which was actually alternate bid two, so they put it in one price. The other three people who submitted bids had a base bid and an alternate price.
Before any other discussion, we need a motion on the floor. So someone want to make a motion?
No.
Well, then I'm going to.
I thought I had a question.
I'll make a motion that we go with the bid as outlined and with A&R Mechanical for $180,000.
I would
second that. Okay, we got a motion and a second. Now we'll have a discussion. Mr. Quisenberry.
All right. Dana, what is the $34,860 that's listed as an exception on A&R?
The exception is that if additional wiring to, at our request, to wire up the chillers all the way back here to a mechanical room that's just outside those double set of doors over there would cost us dollars to run the necessary wiring to the chillers, which is on the opposite end of the building. Both this vendor and Davis Houck can utilize the existing wiring that exists. We've got four circuits out there that can be utilized. They'll put in new breakers, and they'll be able to utilize the existing wiring that is there.
Okay, so we're not going to be using this $34,000 number?
No.
Okay. All right. That's my question.
Any other questions? Patsy?
Oh, well, I haven't had a chance to read this, so the answer may be in the document if I had that opportunity. But why is A&R chosen over Davis Houck?
Because of their price, Patsy. When they clarified to us the point that their total price or their total proposal was $180,000, which included doing the necessary wiring, not the rework wiring, but the wiring, same as Davis Houck. When you add the base bid and alternate two together, Davis Houck was $9,000 more and some change over and above A&R Mechanical's bid.
May I have a follow-up question?
You sure
then?
May.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm having a little trouble making an apple-to-apple comparison because in addition, if A&R is chosen, then there's an additional basically $35,000, which we don't have any of that information in relationship to Davis Houck.
We're not doing the additional work for $34,000, Patsy.
Okay.
We're only doing $180,000. We're purchasing two chillers. We're using the existing wiring. They're going to install new breakers for the chillers, and they'll rework the piping from the wall edge of Brookins to the new chillers for us and insulate, as well as put in controls and shutoffs.
Thank you.
And Patsy, if I may just clarify, when I made the motion, it was for the $180,000, not...
It wasn't for
everything I said. No, as Dana explained when Mr. Quisenberry asked that question a little bit ago, that was not going to be done because that would lead to wiring outside those doors into a room out there, and it wasn't needed.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome.
Josh? This reduction for 11,520, are we able to do that maintenance that's listed there?
We are able to do the maintenance. Uh-huh. That was a throw-in by A&R Mechanical, and we really can't respond to it because no one else, we didn't have that in our bid document.
Okay.
So it would be unfair for us to accept that.
Okay.
And at the same time, since they're going to be installing these and under warranty for at least a year, probably ought to have them do the work for
Very
the first
good.
Year. But yes, our people have the expertise, knowledge, and can take care of them, but we probably ought to let them handle it for the first year.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, that brings up a question for me, if I may. Talking about the warranty for a year, usually in an equipment this big, the warranty usually covers the mechanicals and the labor for the first year.
We haven't seen a final contract with them, but yes, that would be consistent with the purchases of this type.
Okay, well, that's why.
The manufacturer would also have a warranty as well with A&R Mechanical.
Right. So that... then really is that a fair number that, and like you said, they didn't give you any documentation, but yeah, it would lead to ask. Mr. Rosales?
Are there any other hidden costs outside of this 180? Is this energy efficient type of chillers?
Yes, these are, in fact, of the two successful bidders who provided all the information, all four chillers that were submitted will meet appropriate standards from DECO, and we'll be able to apply for a grant up to $19,000.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, to me it's just hard to make a comparison like Patsy had indicated when I see four figures, and I just recently just got this. And basically to make a decision, I mean, I will go with the recommendation of the chair and of the committee, but to me, it's still, I don't know, maybe because I own my own home and we've done many rehab projects in the last 30 years, that I look into the more of the specific details, especially after the nightmare of the nursing home, where we had to put in ductwork and additional ductwork because of the work that was done inside prior to, and it just got real complicated.
I understand, and I'm just starting to find out some of the nightmares involved with the nursing home, but this is a pretty straightforward replacement, mechanical replacement project with very little hidden costs. They're taking care of basically everything. If they have to enlarge the pad, I don't think that they have to, but that is buried within their costs as well. They will handle the installation. We do have to take care of the fence, which was specified in the bid document. We'll remove it as well as, upon completion, install a new one, yet to be defined, but that's the only cost that we as a county organization will have to face.
And naturally, we'll take all the old chillers out as
yes,
well.
Yes, and dispose of it properly.
Okay.
Explain to them about pipes
and shutoffs. Currently, if you heard me say, the cold water pipes that come out of the building and go to each chiller, currently there's shutoffs at each unit that don't work. They're old, dilapidated, rusted clothes. So they're going to put in new closures, both at the chiller but also inside of the building. So if we have to do any major repairs in terms of draining down, we won't lose as much fluid, which will save us money with those two types of closers. Additionally, they're going to rework the pipe when they put in the new pipe. If we go into work on the chillers right now, we've got these, you know, 10-inch pipes in our way, and there's four of them, and they're large, and with insulation around them, they're even larger. So right now, if we have to replace a condenser, which is a very heavy item, you know, 300-400 pounds worth, instead of lifting it with a forklift right to the chiller, you know, we've got to do like what welders do. They put it on a piece of sheet metal and put pipe underneath it and try and manhandle it on those pieces of pipe to get it in there. It's dangerous. It's heavy work. So this is going to be this whole project will benefit our guys down the road, as well as certainly benefit Pod 200 and 300 with the replacement of 1986 vintage chillers. So
do these do these chillers come with their own automated thermostats, or are we going to use the old thermostats that we have? Does it have a thermostat, a major centralized one that does the whole building, or there's different zones?
No, we don't, and that's something we'll be looking at down the road. But the purchase and installation of these chillers will not preclude, hamper us from down the road looking at a building automation system that would benefit the county in terms of reducing the utility usage for this building. Right now, when the equipment is on, it's on 24 hours a day. I mean, we do have a few in Pod 100 smart thermostats that can be, you know, that'll go down at night to a lower temperature or a higher temperature depending upon your season. But you know, we've got pneumatic controls throughout this building, so it's except in Pod 100. So it's very difficult, and we use a lot of energy here, as well as in other buildings. But we do not have building automation systems in any of our buildings except the courthouse.
So by putting new coolers and not putting new regulators or thermostats, would it have been better to do that as an RFP now while they're doing the work than to try to get somebody
not really. I mean,
totally
that's
coming in and readjust something else did.
It's a great question, and it's something that we as a county and a physical plant need to strive for. But no, those chillers need to be replaced. We're down to two condensers in each unit. They require four to provide the cold chilled water that is necessary for Pod 200 and 300, and that you know, from what I've heard in the building, the scuttlebutt, is that get ready for a hot summer because the it is quite warm in this building with without those running at full capacity. And it made no sense at all from what the county did in not replacing those condensers because you'd be throwing good money after bad since those are 1986 vintage. It just buy the newer ones, which are more energy efficient. We'll save money on utility costs from the chillers. And then long-range plans, which could be this year, could be next year, look at building automation. Mm-hmm. There are other pieces of the puzzle in this building that need to be replaced. Our air handlers are original. There's a lot that needs to be done for this building, but as well as others in the county. So it is a matter of sitting down and working with Deb, Van, and our physical plant staff and coming up with really a priority of our many projects. I think the previous director did a nice job of putting information together, and as you see as we roll into the next topic, that's we've got some things scheduled for this year to be done and handled through the capital asset fund. But I would, and I'm getting ahead here, so I don't.
Do we have thermostat locks so that employees don't fidget?
Yes, we do, actually.
The thermostats?
Yes. You see one on the wall over there. Okay. We've had to replace a couple. Pod 100's got them. Okay. We actually, in 400, there are locks. In 300, we don't have any locks because you don't need them because they're controlled by the guys. It looks like you can control them, but it's in actuality, it's kind of a fast
say
one,
no
so
more.
To speak.
Say no more.
And, Geraldo, I would just tell you there's two trains of thought on them boxes. I know businesses that have had them get rid of them. They can be a heat trap. They can become all types of serious issues if the person that has the key isn't around because someone's going to break it to get in it. So, I mean, there's good and bad to everything. But what Dana's saying is some of that stuff you can add on later if you have a good system. But to do it now, and hopefully our staff can do some of that because it's not – a lot of that's replacement and just making sure you rewire what you need to rewire to have it. But this building right now has been sadly the too cold, too hot, too whatever, and that's just part of it. I mean, the other – like we were told the other meeting, there's a lot of other systems out there that could help with this building on the rooftop and what have you. So it's just getting the money and getting it done, but we're going, and I hear your concerns. Mm-hmm. But I'm impressed because I know a few years back we did the jail, the downtown jail, and there was issues with the chiller. And if I remember right, that bill was 100 and some thousand just to work on that one. So we're getting a heck of a deal in my mind based on what little I know about chillers and their prices. So it's been looked at. I think they'll do a good job. Dana will be on top of it. Any cost overruns, we'll hash it out with Dana. Fair enough?
It sounds right to me.
Any other discussion? Patsy.
Yes. I thank Dana for bringing up the fencing issue. And when we took the tour back there, several people commented that was a very open, unprotected space and might have added to the deterioration of the equipment. Is it possible, without causing overheating or things like that, to enclose that a bit more sufficiently so it isn't in the weather 24/7?
Well, the chillers do need to be located outside. They need sufficient air between not only the chiller and the building, but each chiller. They need space to be able to exhaust the fumes straight up. You'll see at the top, there's fans up there that blow the warm air out. The fence that's there is, obviously old. You've seen the concrete that's actually Mother Nature winter through the ground freezing has heaved those posts up out. Even though there's a lock on the gate, anybody can crawl in underneath if you're a kid. So, we need to improve the protection and safety of those. I, I don't think we can enclose them. They're not meant to be enclosed, Patsy, in terms of, you know, building a shelter around them on five sides. So they do have to be exposed to Mother Nature. But we can certainly do a better job of protecting them and allowing, you know, trash, leaves to get in there and block up the air that is pulled into to each unit, so.
Any other questions? We have a motion on the floor, a second. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. Moving right on down, Dana, B.
Yes, I think page four of the original agenda, there's a capital asset replacement fund, which was getting into great questions over there. Budget highlights, first two, obviously, we're attacking, and it so shows you the price, $159,000 was the estimate. As you know, today it was $180,000 for both. I would like to, I guess, ask this committee to assist and give me permission to reevaluate the rest of these listed in terms of budget highlights for this year, as well as what was presented in the past. It's something I think we can do over the next 30 to 60 days. But going over my own list of things as I've walked around and visited each building and talked to our staff, I think that there were some items that were possibly left off. I'd also like to get the staff's input, which I think is mandatory in order for us to put a realistic priority list together. There are some things on here. There's a water heater at the Satellite Jail. Yes, it's original. It was estimated at 15 years of life. It was scheduled to be replaced in 2011. Haven't. There's no problem with it. It still works just fine. It doesn't leak. There's no issues. So postponing that, whether it's 6 months or a year, if we want to move it back slightly, is fine. The juvenile detention center automation system, you know, that's one of our automated system, but it's a DOS-based system through NTEC. We have NTEC controls over there, and it's failing. We can no longer keep up, and we're using more utilities than I think we should be. So we do need to look at replacing that system this year. The water heater in the juvenile detention center, very similar to the other one. It's original for 2000. It's got a 15-year lifespan. It's not even at the end of its lifespan yet, so we could probably delay that fairly easily. Again, you know, a year or two. But again, let's look at the whole picture and try and come up with better prioritization, because we only have so much money. We want to attack it. We want to try and use it with mechanicals that make sense, that use less energy. We can go about it a number of ways, but that seems to me the most prudent. The roof at the JDC, it's an EPDM roof. You know, it's been there since 2000. Yeah, it's got a limited life, but we have very few leaks currently at the building. So, you know, can we delay that? That may be something we want to look at later this year. Let's prioritize again and allow us a little bit of time and opportunity to do that. And then the last two are basically Butler buildings that are garages. They're metal sheds. Neither roof leaks. Yes, they're well over 35 years old each, but they're holding up just great. You know, it'd be nice to talk to Elias to see what their needs are for the future, as well as the sheriff and ESDA or the emergency management group. So I think we can take a look at that. We've got $532,000 is what was forecasted for this fiscal year in capital asset replacement fund. We're going to be using about $318,000 between the Elias demolition that we just bid out, and a purchase order was issued today. The Brook and Steeler's 180, so there's 318,000. Well, that leaves roughly 214,000 to work with. So, again, if you'll direct me, I will go back and we will take a look at everything and try and come up with a priority that, of projects that that fit.
Mr. Quisenberry.
I'd like to ask that you look into a dedicated generator that would be sized appropriately to run the emergency equipment that the current hookup generator would run. We have received report after report from our auditors as to our risk for IT based on our lack of disaster planning. And I'd like to know how much such a generator would cost, not a all-building generator, but a, you know, just the things we need to run while the power's off for a couple hours or something like that. And I would also, I'm not sure whether the corresponding UPS that would bridge the time from a power outage to the generator functioning, probably 30 minutes would be the coverage we'd want, would go under a facilities purchase. In my history, we would have bought something like that as a part of the facility, but in some places that's considered an IT operational expense. So those two things, I think we've been at risk for years, and we've been told that, and every time we've gotten the auditor's report, I looked around the room for the board and said, we got to do something about this, and this seems like an opportunity to do something about that. So I'd like to put that up there.
That's a great point. We are reaching out to GHR. I don't know if you know, but they did a study for Andy's group back in 2011 and identified a generator, a bunch of electric work can be done, needed to be completed, in a UPS, not a generator. That had an estimated price of about $40,000. Half of that was the UPS, which was going to give them, I think, 2 hours of run time. But we want to have GHR dust that off. It's not going to cost much. And take a look at a generator for this building, just for Andy. We might look at putting one or two other essential items on it, perhaps, but it's not a whole building by any stretch of the imagination, as well as the UPS that would carry the crossover, whether that's 30 minutes or 60 minutes. That's a up to Andy call.
Just as a follow-up, I would suggest that you look at what this place would need to operate for a limited period of time in an emergency, and I would look at, you know, situations throughout the year that the operations that go on here that might be outside of the normal operation, for example, elections, which is a time which is essentially, is an essential situation. I know most of that work is probably done over at the garage now, but so I would err on the side of more things that could benefit from emergency power than less. Surely, you know, most offices and the RPC probably doesn't need it, but you know, lights in the hallways, lights in some key offices, outlets that we can easily identify if we need to, those kinds of things.
Yep. Besides that being a top priority for a lot of reasons, you know, there are a couple other generators that we probably ought to take a look at in the near future. Coroner's office, autopsy area, coolers. You've got animal control. You've got an operation room. There's no power backup there, as well as HVAC for winter and summer for the animals. So there are some needs around that haven't been met, and we need to look at all those things. But in terms of, yes, Andy's area is a high priority and has to be, with all of the IT from the county that goes through this building, as well as, and probably more importantly, the communication that goes through this building for sheriff's office, courthouse, et cetera. So good points.
I guess I would just say that these things have been put off for quite some time and talked about for some time, and We really need to be mindful when the budget process starts. I won't be here, or I'll be here for some of it, but, you know, that's what I always tell everybody. It's not that I care just about buildings, it's that if you don't maintain them, as you go down the road, it costs you more and more. And no, I don't believe that everything has to be such a grand thing. There's, you can look at it, but then you can scale it back and work at it that way. So with what you're asking, Dana, I don't think we need a motion or anything. I think that you can take it upon yourself to just start coming back to us with some information, because when we set that up, none of that was in stone by any means, because the other committee wouldn't have cut my budget so bad. But I just would say go ahead and do it, take a serious look at it, and that's, it's been done before, but we really need it. And Andy's group, I mean, after I saw what was upstairs there and just what he told us, we definitely need to get something done there with the generator. And so whatever we can do. And the roofs and the water heaters, I do have a question on the water heaters. Do we ever have an outside inspector that comes into our facilities and looks at that stuff, or does anybody know?
To my knowledge, we've not had the water heaters inspected, other than our maintenance staff servicing them.
Okay.
We have a lot of things that are inspected, I can tell you that, after 6 months on the job, but water heaters are not part
well,
of
Well, I just, because I know the nursing home gets, you know, inspected through the state, IDPH, and yeah. I do know of circumstances where there's an agency that goes into public buildings, or I've heard about it, and if they tag something, you need to get it replaced ASAP. There's no ifs, buts, ands about it. So when you're looking at those issues, especially water heaters that take a lot of pressure and abuse, let's just make darn sure that we're not cutting the budget to put it somewhere else if we need it. Okay?
That's what you heard.
Good. Any other questions?
No, I was going to make a motion if we needed it. We don't need
one. Mr. Quisenberry?
I just want to thank you, Dana, for looking at this list with a critical eye. I can tell you when we built this list, it was under the expectation that these were the things that were about to break. So to have somebody else take a look at it and say, you know, we've got a little give here, we got a little space here, let's go down the list, that gives me some confidence that you're taking a critical look and focusing on what needs to be done, and I really appreciate that.
Okay, next, Dana, is item C.
Just a quick update, actually, the next three. The Elias demolition, it's the annex, it's about 5,500 square feet. We've issued the purchase order today, contacted the vendor, Diggett Champagne. We've reached out to our architect and asked for a meeting, a pre-demolition meeting, so to speak, to be made. We'll do that out at Elias. I did pass out, for your information, a letter that we received from PACA, and they were very gracious. They were great people to work with, did a terrific job, but you can see the list of items, a few architectural things that were able to be salvaged, as well as a number of furniture. I've been told via phone that they've sold about 90% of what they've took from our building. So kudos to them for recycling. But anyway, I pass that along for information.
Next, go ahead.
Okay.
Just move on down.
Just the if you will remember back that last month's meeting on the 16th, talked and invited everyone to come out. We did have a few takers come out and view the lighting for the exterior of the clock tower. So we've settled on fixtures. We'll be putting together final pricing. You'll see a copy of that. Again, we're going to submit that to the clock tower restoration fund for payment. So we'll have those final numbers and details. Hope to have the fixtures in sometime in June. Possibly. It depends upon what the manufacturer says is their lead time. I don't suspect they're that long, but we'll find out. And then the last piece of business is the Illinois Green Business Association. Our green team completed their second two-hour meeting. I've had a couple follow-ups with them about assessing the information and validating the information that we passed along and discussed jointly. So in the next month, we'll be passing some information around the building, as well as they will be coming into the building and doing an assessment, physical assessment of light fixtures, plumbing fixtures, things of that nature, which all go into the process. So again, you know, we started this last month. It'll take, you know, I think I put down 6 months. It'll probably take 5 or 6 months to get through, once to validate everything and get through the certification process. So, but it's a good group to work with, and looking forward to finishing it.
Any questions on any of that? Anybody on the board? Patsy?
Back to D, please. Is Bruce Hannon happy with the fixtures that have been chosen?
Yes.
Thank you.
He was there.
Thanks.
Yep. Yeah. I made sure that Bruce has been a part of the entire process, Patsy. So he's up to date. The last piece that you asked me earlier about, just a quick update on the courthouse tuck pointing and expansion joint. We're in finishing the first month that they've started, on schedule to be completed by the end of June. They have finished the tuck pointing of the original building. They have started on the west side of the new building, coming across, almost finished with the expansion joints on the south side. They still have the east and north end to do. The next two big pieces then are the washing, cleansing of all the brick. This is just on the new part of the building, and then the final application of waterproofing. Took them a month to get through the old building. We really didn't replace too many bricks, probably a dozen maybe, but you know, we had a lot of tuck pointing to do, as well as they cut expansion joints into the brick, which previously had not been done, and then sealed those up. So and that's what they're in the process of doing right now. There's no tuck pointing being done on the new building. It's all expansion joint replacement. That seal that they put in is good for 10 years and needs to be replaced, not unlike our precast buildings at the Satellite Jail and the JDC, which none of those projects have been done to date and are starting to leak. So, you know, as we look at projects, there's
always
a multitude
something
of things.
Ground shifting. Mr. Quisenberry.
Were there any surprises so far in that process? Damage that was not anticipated that had to be repaired?
No, not really. Just what was very visible, you know, and you know, it's difficult to see, obviously, on the ground when you're trying to look up two or three stories. But you know, there's some small fissures in some of the mortar on the new part of the building. But this ceiling product that they will put on, when I say small, we're talking, you know, needle size, will do a nice job of holding that for the next 5 to 10 years. So, but tech pointing needs to be looked at. That's an item that has to be looked at. It's ongoing.
And that'll be in your maintenance schedule, right, Dana?
It'll be on the list.
Any other questions?
Yes, I'll throw one more thing out there if you like.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Mr. Quisenberry.
The other thing that I'd like to, I guess, revisit is the parking lot out here, which I think we looked at and decided not to do anything with right away, but it's clearly at a point where it's about to fail in many places.
We've looked at it. I still have a company coming in. I think they're scheduled to come in next month and give us a ballpark estimate so we know what we're talking about. I have a meeting tomorrow with Jeff Blue from Highway to talk about resealing and how we may work together to do that. I'm not sure what that means in terms of financial arrangements yet, but I don't know what Jeff's got, but and I'm just springing that on Deb, but had an email conversation with him today about it and following up with an in-person meeting tomorrow, so.
Did we ever authorize any money for that?
Yes, we did.
At one point?
In last year's budget, and it was not spent.
So, but it hasn't been re-encumbered?
We didn't re-encumber it,
okay.
No.
Thank you.
Partly because I really don't think what we budgeted was adequate once we really found out what we were dealing with, so.
Any other questions? Okay, moving on. Oh, excuse me. My glasses blurred up. Patsy.
Could you give us a little bit more description of what you're thinking about in relationship to that parking area?
You're talking about the parking area out here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It needs to be resealed. There's some areas that need to be saw cut and taken down to the gravel. Gravel needs to be repacked. And, you know, the total amount of square footage I don't have yet. That's why we'll have Jeff assist in measuring and get an estimate from a company. But right now we're looking at patching and resealing. That's, you know, I think the budget from last year was approximately $15,000 is what I saw. That's going to be barely enough probably to reseal it.
And if I may, on a note, I had a bunch of parking lots resealed and relined late October, November, and this winter was so harsh that the sealant came up and the paint's coming up. So the company's being gracious enough to come by, but you just never know what you're going to run into, and it didn't have time to really cure the way it should have. Quisenberry?
So I assume that it doesn't sound like we have to replace it. It's piecemeal. So this might be a weird question, but when you're cutting and replacing sections, can you choose to use a permeable material and blend it in, or do you have to stay the same material?
Yeah, you need to stay with the same material. We're not talking about cutting that large of an area out. There are just some areas where what it appears, you know, from me without looking at documentation, is that some time ago, there was a project out there that expanded or put something underneath, and areas were cut out and repacked and poured. And those joint lines are where you're seeing a lot of degradation. They're just winter is chewing it up pretty immensely right now.
Any other questions? Okay, we'll move on. Next item is other business. I don't have any other business. Does anybody else? Van, any other business? I guess you don't have any other?
I don't have any business. Sorry, I was looking.
Oh, that's all right.
What did I forget is what I was.
That's all right. I thought I'd throw you in there. I'd like to keep everybody on their toes.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. Next is Chair's Report. The first item, and Mr. Quisenberry wasn't here last week, even though at first he got some credit, is amendment to the 2014 calendar of meetings for County Facilities Committee. Basically, we talked about this, and I threw it out there. The staff that stays and our meeting, I know Highway meets earlier, and 6:30 to me just seemed to be a rough time to go home and get relaxed and then come to a meeting. And summer's here, and I like to mow grass. So I threw out some times. I wanted 5:30. Everybody else talked, and we came up with 6. And in the same note as that, that would follow after June's meeting because of the special circumstances, which is next on my comments, due to us touring the courthouse. But what we're looking to do is amend the calendar so we can start meeting at 6 o'clock starting in July. I'd say for the rest of the year, but let me just put it this way. If something comes up during the winter, I mean, we can look at it. And to me, nothing's in stone. We can always change it if we need to, I guess. I shouldn't say that.
You can, I think you can change it July through November, but the session of the board ends in November, so.
Is it through December now?
The session of the board ends in November.
Okay. Okay. Coming in. Well, I should have a little say so on that.
As long as you give me the tour of this building that I missed because you moved the meeting last month, I'll be okay with that.
We could have put you on Skype. Dana will do it. He'll stay after tomorrow. Josh?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we adjust our calendar of meetings for the Facilities Committee to be at, to have all of our meetings at 6 o'clock for July through November of 2014.
Do I have a second? So it's been moved and second. Any more discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes. So the next item is B, the future meeting, which is going to be next month. It's going to be on June 3rd. And Dana, tell them about it, please.
We'd like to assemble just in the loading dock of the courthouse. We'll go in the back door that's just off of Elm Street, kind of across, catty corner to the old post office. We'll meet there at 5:15. We'll have the tour. And the reason that the meeting wouldn't start at 6, we've got to have sheriffs and the deputies there. Just why we're in the building, that's an added cost, obviously, to the sheriff and his budget. So if we tour from 5:15 to 6, which should give us enough time to get through the majority of the building, then we can exit and come back here to the building versus we said at the last meeting that we could possibly get a meeting room at the courthouse to conduct our
open.
But it makes more sense to come back here and leave the meeting at 6:30. So, but it's important to try and be there at time. If we hear of anybody who's not going to be there, just let us know.
And would you talk to Katie or somebody and see if one of her staff, yeah, maybe we'll there's someone getting down in the basement?
Yeah, we'll have a few staff arranged to help us through this.
Quiz.
What's the situation with parking in the courthouse parking lot at that time? Is that allowed?
Yeah, but it's just easier to go in the back door, I think, which is,
so
and there's
park at the
park
loading
at the
dock?
Loading dock.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Right now they've got it partially blocked off with construction equipment.
We'll listen to the agenda. We'll make sure that the
there's also parking that's really accessible right across the street there,
the parking deck is
like where Great Impasta is. It's right
okay.
by the loading dock.
Great.
Do we need a motion on that, or is that just something you said?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that was a facility tour. And then I have designation of items to be placed on the consent agenda.
Do we have to notice that at the courthouse?
No.
So here and at the courthouse, we'll notice it. Okay, thanks.
Okay. So, Deb, is 7A, that'll go before the full board?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the only item
right. That
has to go this time. Okay, and then I need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second? Josh and Chris. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.